here, you are not to be denied services.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Fatosh, and then Connie.
This is Fatosh. I think the better example, I think, to understand the situation, in Nebraska, you cannot deny a student for education. It doesn't matter if they are legal or not.
That's right.
So I think, I think that's
If they can afford to pay for it.
No.
No. Public education.
Any kid.
You're talking about public school.
Exactly.
Elementary.
Exactly. Any kid that is legal or not can attend a public school, and their residence is exactly the same one. They need to be here. They don't even have to have an address.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that is federal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it is a better, example, that one. Because
I kind of would like to know, like number 12 or section whatever it is, 101 or something. You know, what does 11 say? What does 13 say? You know, okay. All of them. You know, not necessarily now.
Let me tell you the headings. And you can access the whole Rehab Act. 13 is services to American Indians. 14 is annual review of individuals in extended employment. 11 is, if I can find a cooperation, collaboration, and coordination. I think what you're getting at is there another number that deals with citizenship. There is not.
What is American Indians? How is it broken out?
Okay, that the state plan shall include an assurance that, except as otherwise provided in Part C, the designated state agency will provide voc rehab services to American Indians who are individuals with disabilities residing in the state to the same extent as the designated state agency provides such services to other significant populations of individuals with disabilities residing in the state.
Residing in the state.
Right, physically present in the state. Yeah. The Part C has to do with there is a portion of the rehab budget overall that allows reservations, American Indian reservations, to set up their own voc rehab programs. And those then are served separately. But there is not any such in Nebraska.
So residing in the state, to me, means living in the state.
Right.
And you're saying getting off the Greyhound bus.
That's amazing.
That is being
established. They've got their residing in. They can live in a tent in any city park, and then they're resident?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. According See, they have to have a legal address.
No, not
according to, and when we, if we start mixing, one law with another, that's when we'll get into trouble. The one that we are dealing with, as far as the Commission for the Blind goes, is the Rehab Act. You know, that is the foundation of what the Agency for the Blind is obligated to deal with. And we know, as blind people, from having had to change laws a lot of times the laws that are different for one group from another have to do with the experiences that people have had and how that has affected what we needed to do in order to get what we think is reasonable for us to get. You know, some people could say that the vending bill that's happening right now in front of the legislature ought to be a no-brainer. But because a lot of people have differing opinions about that and have their turf to protect or whatever they want to call it, it becomes not a no-brainer for those people, and so we need to help convince them that is something that ought to happen. And so the fact that one aspect, one group of people has been selected out has to do with the fact that those folks had enough different treatment, like we've had, we certainly have had that, mm-hmm. that they felt compelled to get some laws made on their specific behalf. And we do that all the time as blind people. I mean, in some ways, we are more closely related in terms of being marginalized to what happens to immigrants in our country than we are to what people would consider the mainstream population. You know, we've lived more of that life here than a lot of other people have, and I guess part of what I find disturbing about our conversation is that we're there are parallels that it seems to me we can connect with.
Well, when you look at it from a taxpayer standpoint versus a disabled person standpoint, I mean, it's disabled person, sure, I'd like all the blind people in Bangladesh to get great services, but I don't think I'm willing to pay for all the blind of the world to come to Nebraska to...
Same as the employers, that's when they hire
us. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess I feel that issue from the aspect of, you know, trying to apply for jobs that, you know, I guess the taxpayers of the state or whatever, which I've been one of them, would rather pay to have me not be employed than to see to it then that I get services that cause me to be more employable. And you know, they and sure, I'm, you know, and since I don't want to be forever cynical, I'd like to believe that the reason that feels like that is that some of those folks haven't been educated yet to the notion that I am employable and that what I really need is a chance to get out there and apply and be offered the opportunities out there and also be able to get the equipment, some of which through the state, that will make me employable and that will make it possible for me to contribute to the economy more than the economy is going to spend on me eventually, even if I don't do it right off.
Well, I think this is, we're getting into some interesting philosophical conversations, but I think...
It's more relaxed.
Move on, that's right.
Is lunch here yet?
Pretty soon. Then this is Jane?
Yeah. I guess I really see what Barbara's saying and some of the others around here. The bottom line is, immigrant or not, these are blind people, and unlike the blind of Bangladesh, they're actually present in the state of Nebraska. And, you know, that's where I draw the line in my mind, is if they're here and they need us, that's what we're here for.
Oh, yeah, good.
You know, so they're here, we're not bringing them over, really. If private citizens want to go get somebody and bring them into the state, that's their business. You know, once they're here, they're here. And, you know, these are my people, these are blind people. And Barbara's right, there are a lot of parallels between the blind civil rights movement, between the other minorities in this country, physical minorities, racial minorities, other minorities, NAACP, United Farm Workers, American Indian Movement, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, we are a lot like these other guys. And we've seen the effects of that. We've seen the effects of what a good state agency can do. Now, we've built probably, I'm going to get real arrogant here, guys. I'm absolutely convinced this is the best state agency in the country for the blind. We've built this wonderful state agency, and everybody wants to come to it because it's the best there is. So, you know, when you've got the best there is, you know, you can't quibble too much when everybody starts flocking to your door.
And in fact, if people don't want to come here, it probably isn't the best there is, mm-hmm. or whatever. And
right.
So, you know, you really got to, you know, as things improve, you hope that people will want to be there. And mm-hmm. and also that the whole networking thing is how we learn about things. I don't really know the topic itself, the policy on serving. I guess as I understand it, the policy on serving is that we serve any blind person who is asking to be served.
Well, that's the law, and if we want to change it, write our congressman and
exactly.
Move on.
That's true, too.
Thank
you, Carlos.
Okay, so the next topic is the if there is anything new on the e-government initiatives. I don't
There isn't anything new on the accessibility. Barbara did mention in her report that from the correspondence, it looked like they, the governor and those who are putting this out, you know, do have accessibility in mind. I do want to report to you, though, that the memo itself from the governor back in November had requirements of agencies, first, that we should use the state's public notice calendar as an additional method for announcing events and activities. We are now doing that for both the board meetings and the vendors committee meetings. That isn't something we had done before because we thought more of our specific audience in getting public notice, but so that's something we are doing now. And then second and third have to do with forms being on the database, and it's called a business portal, and Nebraska Online will be contacting us on those things, but we certainly, we want our forms to be available to the individual no matter where they are in the state, and so having things online is something, you know, we're definitely in favor of it, so we'll be working with them. We have not been contacted, but when we do, we'll make sure things are on there. And anytime we develop forms, we really work hard to figure out how to make it so that it is an accessible form. So that's that.
Okay. And there, you know, in the correspondence we'd received, it seemed like they were being responsive to that issue.
Yes.
and would in fact get in touch. I would assume that if a long period goes by and it seems like something maybe just being overlooked, that, you know, that someone will contact them and say, hey, is anything new happening?
Right. You know, Pearl, you mentioned Nebraska Online, and one thing that I found interesting in that public meeting tapes was talking about all the public records that are now available online through Nebraska Online in Nebraska. Does anybody know, or has anybody ever, is Nebraska Online very accessible?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's parts of it that think they are, and then through our experience and pounding on their doors, they haven't been. For example, the state personnel has online applications, and kind of from the get-go they said, well, oh yes, they're accessible, and we knew they weren't, I believe, I mean, we went kind of around and around with them and worked toward improvement. Now, my understanding is they are now accessible. I could be wrong, somebody.
If you are, this is Fatosh, if you
yes.
are average JAWS user, yes. If you are not so familiar, then you end up in a male instead of a female, if you want to check a female. Or
yeah.
You check, it always comes up, you cannot listen to see if you have a criminal history or not. So, you know, if you're a good user of JAWS, there are ways to get around it, but if you don't, just listening what is on the screen, you put things that you don't want to put in.
So it's accessible for you, but probably not for me.
and that kind of gets to the heart of it, though. I mean, for somebody who doesn't know how to use a computer at all, it's not accessible either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's kind of an ongoing thing, and it really needs all of this, not just those forms, but all of e-government needs all of blind people that are trying to access any state government, you know, whether it's your tax forms online or the Commission for the Blind thing or anything. The consumers need to communicate to those departments, those parts of government, about their online applications, and, you know, to keep doing that, and so that's an ongoing need.
Well, and I can just give myself an upbraiding or whatever too, because one of the things that I tend to do if something seems weird about a form or whatever, I'm I'm more likely to talk to people I know or whatever, and not necessarily to go to the source of whatever that is, because I don't want to feel stupid, or more stupid than I already, you know, already do, about whether it's something that I'm doing or whether it's something with the form. And really, truly, it doesn't matter. If the thing isn't working, if you can get stuff in there but you can't confirm it, that's still a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I, along with all the rest of us, need to persist with those things and to go to the source of whatever the problem is and explain to them what kind of a deal is going on. Because even if it is my lack of skill, not everybody who's sighted has great skills on the computer either. And if we're saying, you know, everybody ought to ask questions, we ought to also. And some of it really does have to do with our screen readers and that sort of thing. Sometimes some of it has to do with the way the thing just is.
That's right.
And what they're asking for, how much right. sense does that make, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I think we really do all need to keep pressing for it, because if they just think that one or two people are doing it and then those people get good enough to do it and then they go away, that everything's all right, then we've short shrifted ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chairperson?
Yes.
And the things that they need to do to fix it is very simple. I mean, we're not asking an incredible amount of things from them. It's very simple to fix. But they don't want to work on it. That's the bottom line. And what happens is that the places like Lincoln Action Program came to us and asked our help to get their site when it is perfectly accessible. I mean, if they come and ask, you know, we can help them, but they don't.
This is Pearl, and yes. We do, when we're aware of situations, we do have our staff, usually the technology staff, but sometimes others, to take that initiative. We don't just sit and wait for agencies to come to us, but if we're aware, if consumers have let us know there's a problem with something, you know, and if we feel like we have the expertise to provide what the fix would be, then we do make the contact and follow up and you know, do what we can to get the change in place.
Okay. Is there anything else on that issue? If not, the next item on the agenda is the public comment section. Does anybody in the public have anything, any comments? If not, we'll just bulldoze right along.
Comment about where's our lunch?
It's coming.
Right.
This is Pearl. Maybe in the future what we should do is address the lunch question very early in the day.
Like 9 o'clock.
And that way...
Yeah.
You know, good idea.
That's not a bad idea.
The order could be early.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Or even when we pick a site, you know, have that be part of the... pre-planning of the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Right. You got that right.
Of course, then for the people that come from the audience, and if we might not necessarily be able to deal with them in advance, but...
Can I put this on your new business?
I don't think I put lunch on a new business, no.
Yeah, you know, it was a thing.
It's future business, we'll eat some
future more. Business? I'll leave it alone then. Mm-hmm. Can you guys tell me
other I've ones? Already made a point... item a to-do on my to-do list to before each meeting we'll make sure that whoever the person that's kind of doing the logistics of the meeting also, you know, is asked to get some menus ahead of time and or see what options are close by. So we'll it's all on the list already.
See if Nancy were here.
Okay. Oh goodness, what was that?
Champagne.
That was really weird. Somebody actually burst
like
there
a balloon or something.
Okay. New business.
I don't know.
I don't know what it was either.
I don't know.
I think a green light just exploded.
Oh, well, it wasn't mine. No, that's good. Okay, so the next is the new business, and the first thing is the description of the brochure for employers.
Okay, that was something that was a brochure that was developed by the Lincoln District Office, and I had shared the text of that with you all some time ago, and at the last meeting, Barbara asked if it also, or at some point, I don't know, was that the meeting, you asked if there were photographs on it. I said, yes, there actually is just one photograph, but I brought the thing so I could describe it to you. On the front of the brochure, it's one of these trifold things, and it has the name of the commission and what our mission is. Well, actually, it's not the mission of the commission, but our mission related to the project of placement for which this brochure was developed. Our mission to facilitate mutually profitable partnerships between blind workers and employers. And then it gives the Lincoln phone number, the toll-free number, and the fax, and the website address. And then there's a photograph of, looks to be like auto mechanic shop, and there is a car up on, you can see the wheels and the bottom of the car up on one of those lifts. And there is a man holding a white cane, standing there with his arm up, checking something about the tire, so doing some sort of mechanical work on the car. And then the rest is text.
Okay.
It's kind of neat.
And then I also wanted to mention that right now this brochure is in a packet that a couple of the Lincoln District staff took to a job fair or a conference of employers or something, and they included in the packet this brochure, as well as the agency brochure itself, and a little flyer about workresources.org that's part of the Lincoln Action Program, a document that our staff have developed called Misconceptions on Hiring a Blind Employee, and then an article by Ted Young on it on reasonable accommodations and equality, and an article by Kenneth Jernigan on the pitfalls of political correctness, euphemisms excoriated, pardon me. So that's the packet that was provided to employers at that fair.
Barb, very quickly, Jimmy, Pearl, is there a plan to put that brochure online, you know?
We just haven't talked about it.
That's fine.
We should have that brochure on the internet, on our website. Thank you for saying that.
All right. That's
fine. I will send you the text.
All right. I'll create a link for it.
But it may not need its own link. I mean, maybe within the VR or general, we can think about that.
Yeah,
talk with Carlos about the best place for that.
All right.
Excuse me.
Okay, yes.
The lunch is here. I guess we're running off kind of an old menu, and so the prices are just a little bit higher.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
We have enough to cover, you know, the cost of the lunch, but we don't have any tip.
Okay. Yeah, Patoche makes plenty of money. I can pay the tip.
Okay.
Possibly. We actually do.
I think we
are. Yeah,
it's going to be hard to hear on the.
Yeah.
As long as you can be picked up on the tape, that's the main thing. So.
I guess I did. He'll pick me up if I'm
yes.
This. All right. Yes. Taking a second here to change gears. It just came from a different meeting, so I'm gonna check my notes out here real quick.
Make sure you brought the right one.
Make sure I got the right one, Jane. Okay. All right, well, I'm guessing most everybody knows who I am, and I think I know most everybody in this room, but I'm Jonathan Ross, and I'm the program manager for the Commission's Technology Services. And I was asked to come here today to talk a little bit about our technology services, and hopefully try to answer whatever questions any of you may have. Kind of broke it down into a couple of different topics, and probably the top one on my list is we've recently begun trying to better define our technology services. As technology and computer technology in particular began to be used more by mainstream workplace, quickly after that came adaptation so that blind people could use technology as well, computer technology in particular. And there was a little bit of it being used, and then there was a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more, and I think it's pretty obvious to most everybody that it's hard to find a job nowadays that doesn't involve using a computer to some extent. So the amount of demand for technology training amongst blind people has increased pretty dramatically over the last several years. And so when the when technology began to be something, computer technology again in particular, began to be something that blind people were using, we started incorporating that into the services we provide. But there wasn't really a point where we sat down and said, okay, really this is in black and white, you know, this is what technology services means. It just kind of evolved. And what we have kind of realized is that it's evolved into maybe something that's not particularly manageable, and we're maybe not being as effective as we could be if we were a little better defined in what our role is. And so one of the tools that we're working on in order to kind of accomplish that better focus is we've begun drawing up a set of kind of definitions or guidelines for what our technology services are. And we've kind of broken it into two parts. One part is fairly complete. The other part is still very much in need of work. In fact, we don't even have much of the way of a rough draft on that one, but the two parts we've broken into are technology services to individuals and technology services to employers. Now, those two obviously overlap quite a bit, because as a VR agency, many of the individuals we're working with are working toward a goal of becoming employed or possibly already employed. So the technology services to the individuals overlaps greatly with technology services to employers. But there are some distinctions that can be made between the two, and that's what we're hopefully going to be able to do. I think what I'd like to do is just simply read through kind of what we've written up as far as the technology services guidelines for individuals. It's the ones for businesses that we have not, or not businesses, but employers, that have not been really well defined yet. But this one is in pretty good form right now. And I just have a short little definition of technology, because technology can mean anything. Cloud is technology. So for the purpose of these guidelines, technology is defined as computer hardware, software, and peripheral devices, both mainstream and adaptive. Okay. So for services to individuals, we really have two kind of groups of individuals that we come in contact with as far as being asked to provide resources for technology. Yes?
Excuse me, I want to interrupt a second. I wonder if it would be best during your report, can we turn off the microphones that are here on these tables?
I turned them down. They're a bit stronger than the others, but they're really picking up the rattling of the paper.
That's what I figured.
From the table.
They have on and off switches.
Well, I've got control.
Oh, it just wasn't on. That would help. That would help.
We haven't got
How are we now? Okay, everybody make your noise right now. I'm going to start talking in 30 seconds. Okay. Okay, anyhow, basically two different types of individuals may contact our technology services. And the one type is somebody who is a current client or has an active case with the commission. And the other would be somebody who does not currently have an active case. Okay, so clients or non-clients, however you want to phrase that. Okay, so under services to individuals with active cases, this is what we have written. When a client and counselor are considering including technology in a client's plan, a technology specialist shall be involved in the assessment of the specific technology needs. The technology specialist will assist the client and counselor by making recommendations on appropriate equipment after the initial assessment of the client's needs. Technology requests will be made in writing or other appropriate format by the client and reviewed by the counselor and the district technology specialist. The request should demonstrate that the client has an understanding of why this technology is an appropriate tool to meet their needs. The client should also research and include the anticipated cost of the technology in their request. This request will be included in the client's file. A decision on approval or denial of the request will then be made by the counselor and supervisor and with the client's input as well. Actually, this is kind of poorly worded. What we're trying to convey there is that let me just read it the way it's written. Maybe it is okay after all. I shouldn't be editing as I'm reading. It says, a decision on approval or denial of the request will then be made by the counselor and supervisor when appropriate, based on the technology specialist's recommendation after reviewing the client's request. Technology will be purchased for a client after a hands-on evaluation with that technology has taken place. When the specific technology in question is not available for a hands-on evaluation, reasonable attempts to gain access to the technology for the purpose of evaluation will be made. A reasonable attempt may involve borrowing technology from a vendor, arranging a demonstration at a vendor's site, or evaluating a similar piece of technology. A client must demonstrate an appropriate level of motivation and follow-through before the technology will be purchased. Training goals will be developed based on the individual's current skills and the expected outcomes. A plan for achieving these goals will be developed. This plan will detail the training resources that will be used. And then, as examples, I have technology specialist time, counselor time, vocational rehabilitation technician time, other provider, tutorials, classes, etc. Periodic reviews of progress will take place at appropriate intervals to ensure that goals are being achieved and make necessary adjustments to the plan. Clients will be informed of the responsibilities that come with the ownership of technology, including the costs associated with upgrades and repairs before purchases are made. When the technology is issued to a client, they will be given a supplement to the acceptance agreement, which will include detailed explanations of responsibilities specific to the technology they are being issued. Clients that receive technology will be expected to be involved in the setup and or installation of the technology when appropriate. When requests for installing upgrades or maintaining equipment are made, technology specialists When requests for installing upgrades or maintaining equipment are made, technology specialists will first refer the client to technical support for the product or other resources. On-site visits by technology specialists for the purpose of installing upgrades or maintaining equipment for any client will only be done when it is determined to be critical to the client's program that the commission provides that service. And then under services to individuals without active cases, it says requests for technology support from individuals without active cases will be limited to short telephone or email support. If the issue cannot be resolved in a brief period of time, the technology specialist will refer the individual to the vendor of the product or other resources. Technology specialists cannot provide on-site visits or support for individuals who do not have an active case unless it is for the purpose of assisting in the determination of need for opening a case. If support from a technology specialist beyond that outlined in these guidelines is necessary, a determination of appropriate commission services will be made. If the support needed is related to employment situation, the services to employers guidelines will be used. And that is the end of what we have written. And just a couple of comments about some of these and I guess the rationale behind them. As far as the reasons for the guidelines, I think I kind of summarized that we just need to get a better focus on what are we really able to provide in the way of technology services. And I think that this will help in a couple of things. One is, not only will it better define our role, but it will also help individuals have a better understanding of what their responsibilities are. And the other thing is, hopefully, by us better defining that and putting individuals in the position of seeking outside resources for their support, it will in turn generate the availability of support. And what I mean by that is one of the problems is a lot of times I'll get a phone call from somebody and they're maybe not an active client. The need isn't something that I can help them with right over the telephone. So where do I turn them to next? You know, there aren't a lot of resources available in the communities that are equipped to deal with adaptive technology. So part of the reason for that is because there isn't a demand for that. So it's kind of a catch-22. You know, there's not going to be a demand until the resources exist, but the resources aren't going to exist until there's a demand. And certainly, as long as we're kind of picking up that work, there's not going to even be the start of a demand. So that's kind of the rationale behind some of that. Getting back a little bit to the differences between employer guidelines and individual guidelines, like I said, there's an overlap there, obviously. But one of the things we want to avoid in the future is creating too much of a dependence on us by employers. We're certainly a resource that's available to them, and we want to do whatever we can to facilitate them making whatever accommodations are necessary so that blind individuals can be employed. And I think in most cases, employers certainly welcome what's, in their eyes, free support. But they also are quite willing to accept the responsibility of getting this service performed. But again, it comes down to the resources. And if we are continually doing that for free, there aren't going to be the community resources developed, and there isn't anywhere to turn them to. So the employer guidelines are going to attempt to better define our role as far as employers are concerned, and put it in such a way that we don't want to be cutting employers off. We don't want to say, you know, you can't get any help from us, because that would not be a good situation. But we also don't want it to just be a given that we are the source for support. The basic reason for all of this, both the client guidelines and the employer guidelines, is we're simply spreading our resources too thin. If we had unlimited resources and could employ as many technology specialists as we needed to, that would be great. We'd be the best service provider in the world if we could. But we are working with a limited set of resources, and so we need to make sure that we're using them in a manner that's going to be the most effective. So, I don't know, does anybody have any questions about anything in particular that were in the written guidelines I read?
I don't know that I have so much a question as a comment. I think that is a good idea to help people to understand what the parameters are. Because I think sometimes people think, you know, they don't necessarily get as upset about what did or didn't happen as they do about what they
I think so. I think that it really boils down to not even necessarily doing anything a lot different than we've been doing it. It's just better defining it so that we're all on the same page in terms of expectations and understandings of responsibilities.
Jonathan, this is Hubert. Yes. Early on, you were stating that the equipment would be based on what the client perceived to be their need.
Let me see where that's written and see if I can. Well, what I have here is that, let's see here, when a client and counselor are considering including technology in the client's plan, technology specialists will be involved in the assessment of the specific technology needs. The technology specialist will assist the client and counselor by making recommendations on appropriate equipment after the initial assessment of the client's needs. So I think the process is, first you've got to kind of evaluate what is the need, kind of bring everybody together and talk about, okay, what's the most appropriate tools to meet this need? So I think it's something that we would assist with.
I didn't catch it.
Okay. But at the same time, there are certainly times when the clients are already very well informed and they know what equipment is best for them. And it's just a matter of us kind of discussing with them and helping everybody to come to a good understanding of, is this the best tool? And of course, it certainly boils down in certain instances to, you know, is there a reason for there to be a preference for one, you know, piece of equipment over another? So certainly we're not saying that we're going to put ourselves in a position where we're going to dictate what equipment a person would use, but we want to be able to be involved in helping to educate everybody in the process and making sure that, you know, if somebody comes requesting a particular piece of equipment, they may not be aware of other equipment that might be a more appropriate fit for their need. So basically it's just saying that we're going to really evaluate the need and work together to come to that conclusion.
I was just wondering whether the situation might arise where they arrived at a disagreement on certain technology, but later on the client learned that there's other technology available, that would he be able to bring that back to his counselor for discussion?
That'd be something that would be, that's one of those individual case-by-case things that would have to be evaluated at that time.
Thank you.
So, mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Well, one of the things that comes up a lot of times is that, you know, you have an interview for a job and, you know, and people say, okay, but this is what the job responsibilities are. And you think, well, okay, most of those are doable. But there may be one thing about it that, it looks like a bugaboo, or that maybe you don't really know for sure how you would do that one thing. And then I think this may be getting into the area where you're talking about the overlapping of the employer guideline and the individual one, where somebody would know that, you know, and maybe they've been on a job for a while and everything has been doable, but all of a sudden something changes. And the thing that's changing means that either they don't really know for sure if the technology they have is going to still be serviceable, or if something else needs to happen. Now, if that person calls the commission, you know, either of those people, either the one who says, well, you know, okay, I think this stuff is mostly doable, but there's one thing I'm not sure about, or the person who has been on the job for a while and is going to be possibly promoted or not, partly based on whether the technology works or not. And, you know, if those people aren't clients, how would those guidelines speak to that person? Would they be referred to some...
That's a great question, and that's one of the big question marks. That's why I haven't finished writing the employer guidelines, because it is a kind of a gray area. Yeah. You know, one of the things we've discussed is... you know, maybe we need to look at it based on the situation. If it's a case of the employer has purchased new computers and there really isn't anything in terms of a training issue, it's just a matter of the equipment needs to be set up again on a new computer, you know, to me, that's not a rehab issue. That's an equipment issue. And it would be reasonable in my mind for the employer to seek out the resources to get that taken care of. Okay. If it's a case where maybe there's new job duties and this person, in order to retain their job or to get a promotion or whatever the case may be, needs to learn additional skills, well, then it perhaps is a rehab issue. And so that might be a case where that person should become an active client once again to receive those services. But certainly, if it's a matter of a relatively short investment of effort and time, you've got this big question mark. How do you make the call? You know, do I just go out and take care of it because it's easier to do that than it is to help them arrange some other alternative? Or do I also go out and take care of it just because I don't want to run the risk of this employer feeling a burden and making the situation uncomfortable for the employee? You know, it's difficult to make a determination on that. You know, who is responsible at that point? How would we provide the services? But one thing that is certain
is that currently with our workload versus resources, we are not able to be a great, excellent resource to employers. You know, if an employer calls me up and they have an urgent need, I've got to assess, well, which is more urgent? And it might mean canceling a training opportunity with a client for the third time in a row. Well, I have to evaluate. Is that a higher priority?